WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On WNYC. So at the King's Theater in Brooklyn today, Mayor Adams will deliver what his office is calling an address on his first 100 days in office. Today is actually day 116. On day 100 itself, you'll remember the mayor was diagnosed with COVID-19 after attending the Gridiron Club dinner in Washington, which had lots of singing but few masks, people sitting close together, no pre-event testing. Just as the mayor was urging all New Yorkers to go back to their pre-COVID routines, you could say he led by example. In this day 116 speech, now that he's recovered, the mayor will give details of his budget proposal for the next fiscal year, which begins on July 1st. The total budget will be around $100 billion. $11 billion of that goes to the NYPD. Members of City Council yesterday called for an extra billion or so in funding for crime prevention measures, such as mental health services and a year-round, not just summer, youth employment program. The mayor and the council negotiate the final budget together. And that's a good note on which to meet the latest guest in our series, 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks, in which we are welcoming every member of New York City Council in this year when most of them are new because of term limits and it's majority female for the first time ever. It's week 17, and today we welcome the council member from District 17 in the South Bronx, Rafael Salamanca, one of the longest-serving council members now, first elected in 2016. He chairs the very important Land Use Committee, important because of the constant flow of controversies over development, gentrification, and affordable housing. Before joining council, he was president of the 41st Precinct Council, the neighborhood group that works in conjunction with the NYPD around there. So that's, of course, very relevant to the mayor's top focus and what many New Yorkers consider issue number one right now. Councilmember Salamanca's district includes Concourse Village, Cortona Park East, East Tremont, Hunts Point, Longwood, Melrose, Morrisania, Port Morris, North Brother Island and South Brother Island, and West Farms, 10460. Councilman, thanks for joining our series, 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me.
I'm asking every council member, what's the most common reason that constituents contact your office this year? And in your case, since you've been there for 6 years, I'll also ask how that has changed over time from before the pandemic to today.
Yes, no, definitely. Look, I've had the honor and privilege to serve my community for the last 12 years in government. The first 5.5 years as a district manager of my local community board. And then in 2016, I came in a special election as a council member. And I would say in throughout the 10 years or the 12 years in government, the issues have staggered. Affordable housing has always been an issue. Public safety, education. But what I've noticed that these last 2 years, crime has been the number one concern in my community. The uplift of gun violence, the uplift of gang activities, and most importantly, shoplifting. Many stores such as Rite Aid and Duane Reade, some of them are closing in my council district. And when we walk in to shop, the shelves seem to be empty. And so we're getting flooded with calls as to what are we going to do to address this issue. And, you know, we've been working closely with the management and these pharmacies and also with PD to ensure that there's a police presence to be a deterrent so that we can minimize the amount of shoplifting that's occurring in my council district.
Well, the mayor so far has been emphasizing law enforcement responses to crime. Major crimes citywide are up by more than 40% so far this year, according to the city's own stats, in addition to what you said about your district in particular. But the New York Times notes this morning that the mayor has yet to release a housing plan. Is the mayor getting the balance about right, or not so much, in your opinion, on where he's putting his energies and longer term or shorter term responses to crime?
I met last week with Jessica Katz. She is the housing czar for the mayor. And we were discussing as to, you know, the mayor's housing plan. And I know that a plan will be released soon. But in my discussions, we spoke about what's true affordable housing, given the AMIs that the federal government, that HUD, gives us, which myself and many of our colleagues feel that are not, they're truly not affordable. We spoke about homelessness, you know, in our communities. About a month and a half ago, the mayor and I, we did a ribbon cutting for a safe haven in my council district to help those individuals that are chronically homeless, that are sleeping in the hallways and the ER waiting rooms of Lincoln Hospital.
You know, those new safe haven beds with wraparound services, supposed to be better quality than the typical shelter, right?
Exactly. They get wraparound services. First, they get a bed, they get a meal, they get to shower, and most importantly, they get services. They get to see a doctor, a provider, get to see mental health provider, and also the social workers help them with ensuring that they have the benefits that the city of New York is offering. And so when we're speaking about the mayor's housing plan, yes, we're eager for it to be released. But I have confidence in working with his administration that we're going to be able to get a plan that is adequate and that we can work with as a whole body.
Were you among the council members on the steps of City Hall yesterday calling for the social services additions as part of a more holistic approach to fighting crime?
No, I was not in the stairs yesterday, but I am a member of the budget negotiating team, and I am supporting my speaker and my colleagues on this ask for this $1.5 billion. We understand that public safety has to be a priority, but we also have to balance it out with programs. We need to ensure that there are mental health programs for those who really need it. And most importantly, we need to provide programs and opportunities for our youth, whether they're after-school programs or all-year-round programs for employment. We need to figure out how to get our youth jobs so they can keep their, you know, money in their own pockets, avoid hanging out in the streets, and also with these programs that we keep our adolescents in these programs, these after school programs, they'll be tired at the end of the day. They'll go back home and start it all over again. The goal here is to ensure that we keep our adolescents occupied.
Do you have a review yet of the mayor's neighborhood safety teams as they've been deployed in your district? The fear, as you know, is these teams are more likely than ordinary uniformed cops to arrest a lot of young people for small things, ensnaring them unnecessarily in the criminal justice system, mass incarceration, and also these teams being a higher risk than other cops for an Eric Garner or Amadou Diallo style tragedy. Do you have a review yet of the mayor's neighborhood safety teams as they've been behaving in your district?
I am constantly speaking with my commanding officers for my precinct, especially the commanding officer at the 4-1. You know, when we speak about crime and gun violence, you know, that was the number one call that I was getting from my constituents. So I supported the mayor when he came out with this neighborhood safety team. But the focus, and this is what I'm speaking to my commanding officer constantly, that the focus has to be in areas where there is high crime, in areas where there is high gun violence. And that has been the focus. Look, our communities want to feel safe. We want to see a presence. We want to see a PD presence. But what we don't want is overzealous cops who are beating on our young kids, our Black and brown kids. And so that message has been very clear to all my commanding officers. We will support them when they're right. But when they're wrong, we're going to call them out on the issue.
Let's take a phone call from your district. I see Anthony in the Bronx. You're on WNYC with your council member, Rafael Salamanca. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. And hello, councilman. I have a concern. I live in a concourse village, and our local CVS, which was downstairs from us, closed recently because of the issue with the, you know, people stealing. And then there's the other one on 149th Street in Melrose. And right in front of it for the last 2 weeks, there's been nothing but garbage, open garbage, on the street. And when I go, I've been in there twice over the past weekend and asked if whether or not they were going to pick the garbage up.
It's just outrageous. It's
outrageous. They refuse to pick it up. And it's right over there in front of Lincoln Hospital and between 161st Street and 149th Street and Morris Avenue. There are no trash cans and no signs telling people to pick up after their dogs. So can you tell me what you can do about that, please?
No, thank you for bringing that to my attention. I know that on 149th Street in that area, 149th Street and 3rd Avenue, we have what's called the 3rd Avenue bit. They do an excellent job in cleanliness. Now, that area after Times Square has the most foot traffic, and so there's constant overflow of garbage. Now, on 149th between 149th and 161 on Morris Avenue, I will reach out to sanitation to see how we can improve the cleanliness in that area.
Anthony, thank you. And feel free to call the council member's office and say you spoke to him on the Brian Lehrer Show for follow-up. But Anthony was also an example backing up what you were saying before. Drugstore chains are going out of business, or the individual locations of some of the major chains are going out of business because of the robberies that are taking place. And it's really kind of shocking to a lot of people to think, you know, a Rite Aid, a Duane Reade, or something like that, this is part of a major corporation, could be so intimidated by shoplifters, by thieves, breaking and stealing a bunch of stuff, that they would actually go out of business, which is sort of a surrender and a statement that it can't be policed. How should we understand this?
Well, you know, it's frustrating to see that these shoplifting continues, and it seems as if it's a revolving door for those individuals who are shoplifting. You know, we have to. Many of those individuals that are shoplifting have substance abuse problems, and that's something that I see in my council district with opioid use. Those individuals that are constantly shoplifting, it's because they want to support their habit, and that's why I'm an extremely big supporter of ensuring that in the budget. Ensuring that there's adequate funding for programming so that we can get those individuals who have substance abuse problems and are shoplifting so that they can sustain them. How do we get them the help that they need? How do we get them off the streets? How do we address the substance abuse so that they no longer have to shoplift so that they can maintain their habit? It's an ongoing problem. And it's something that we're working with our colleagues and city government to see how we can get those individuals that need the help, how do we get them the help that they need so that they can stop this pattern.
Councilmember Rafael Salamanca with us from District 17 in the South Bronx on week 17 of our year-long series, 51 council members in 52 weeks, in which we're going district by district, and we're going to talk to the city council representative from every neighborhood of New York City this year, in this year when so much of city council is new and it's majority female for the first time ever. And council member, as we told your office when we invited you on, we're inviting every member to bring a show and tell item from their district, just something that they would want to tell the rest of the city, the rest of the whole region, all our listeners about that they might not know about from your district. And, you know, people have been bringing pretty light or fun or promotional things for the most part. Last week's council member from a neighboring district said, hey, the Bronx Zoo is in my district. It's a great thing. Another one from the Bronx said, hey, Van Cortlandt Park is in my district. I see that you've brought something much more serious and very poignant.
Yes, I brought with me my asthma pump. You know, my community, we suffer from, you know, many health disparities, whether it's diabetes, hypertension, and of course, asthma. We have the world's largest produce markets markets in Hunts Point. We have the meat market, fish market, produce market, and we have over 700 businesses in the community. And for decades, we've had over 15,000 trucks who come in and out of the Hunts Point community daily so that we can feed the entire city of New York. And, you know, I am proud that the state has stepped up and they've added $1.8 billion so that where they have restructured the Sheridan Expressway, where they're adding ramps in and out of Hunts Point so that trucks no longer have to drive through our communities to get there. But the reason that I brought my asthma pump as a show and tell is I'm born and raised in my community. My dad worked in the Hunts Point market for 18 years. And as a result of living in, you know, in this area where there's high pollution in terms of the, you know, because of the amount of trucks that are coming in and out, I'm an asthmatic. So is my 7-year-old son. And so are many constituents of mine in my council district. And so, you know, we're working with the city to see how we transform the markets who are running on diesel, that they can run on something that's more equitable on electricity. And, you know, we're eager for the state to finish the construction of the ramps so that these trucks no longer have to drive through our communities and they can go directly to the destination and out of our communities.
And when you talk about asthma and respiratory illness and health disparities, your district got hit very hard by the pandemic, I know. Can you put it in any kind of numerical or human terms, like how many COVID orphans you have now in your district or anything?
I don't have those numbers, but I can tell you that I lost my dad during COVID at the height in April of 2020. And I lost many family members and friends, and it hit home. And, you know, during the pandemic, we did not just see how it affected our health in terms of the health disparities. And then you compound that with COVID. But what we also saw was the food inequities in the South Bronx. You know, we have the world's largest markets, but yet we have food deserts in the Hunts Point community. And so during the pandemic, my office, we partnered with different businesses in Hunts Point, where in a year and a half, we fed over 65,000 families, providing them with fresh produce and fresh food that was donated from the markets. And, you know, the last final years that I have in the council, my focus will be on addressing health disparities, but most importantly, addressing the food inequalities that we have in the South Bronx.
Where are you on the debate now about how much to lift COVID rules and let protection be a matter of personal choice with N95s and vaccines and going indoors to things or not, and because of the antiviral treatments being available now, at least in theory? I ask because the argument for keeping a lot of rules on is largely to protect the most vulnerable among us, and your district has a disproportionate number of vulnerable people by many measures.
Yeah, well, look, I follow the experts. In my household, everyone in my home is vaccinated, including my 7-year-old son. And you know, my son goes to school. It's up to them if, you know, their choice, if they choose to wear their mask. And so I allow my son, it's his choice if he chooses to wear his mask. I think we just need to be vigilant as we first, I encourage everyone in my council district to get vaccinated, especially because of the health disparities that I have. We know that the vaccine saves lives. And I encourage everyone as well, when you're indoors, when you can, to wear a mask if you're around individuals that you don't know, you know, if they're vaccinated or they're not family members. So again, I am not the expert on this issue. I follow the science and I follow the recommendations from the professionals.
So masks for 2 to 4 year olds in daycare or pre-K, have an opinion?
It's challenging. They cannot be vaccinated. And I just don't have an answer for you on this. I follow the experts on this.
Continued vaccine mandate for all in-person private sector workers in the city?
I think it's important that everyone be vaccinated, yes.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio and live streaming at wnyc.org. A few more minutes with Bronx City Council Member Rafael Salamanca. question from a listener via Twitter. Ask Salamanca why he stood with notorious homophobe Reverend Ruben Diaz Sr. for an endorsement event for Diana Reyna for lieutenant governor. What would you say to that listener?
Well, let's be clear here. The Reverend and I've known the Reverend for many years, and I've been very clear from the very beginning that I do not stand with him on his stance on marriage equality. And that's clear from the very beginning. I endorsed Diana Reyna yesterday because I believe in Diana Reyna. I've known Diana for over 15 years. I believe in her passion. And given the politics of what's happening with the lieutenant governor position at the moment, I think that Diana has a shot as being the first Latina Dominican woman or the first Latina or Latino to hold a public office in the state of New York. And I'm proud to have endorsed Diana Reyna yesterday.
Now, Diana Reyna, many people may not know, is the candidate for lieutenant governor in the Democratic primary, running on a ticket with Tom Suozzi running for governor. People can vote separately. A lot of people don't realize that. It's not like president and vice president of the United States where you vote for them together. You can vote for your lieutenant governor and your gubernatorial candidate separately in the primary. Are you also endorsing Suozzi at the top of her ticket?
Absolutely not. I've endorsed Kathy Hochul as my governor for governor of the state of New York.
All right. And our next guest, just coincidentally, is Jumaane Williams, sitting for his April candidate interview. We had Governor Hochul 2 weeks ago. We had Congressman Suozzi last week. It's Jumaane Williams' turn in just a few minutes here after we finish up with Councilman Salamanca. One of the things that your office told us that you're interested in, something that a lot of listeners who have kids in the public schools might be interested in but don't even know is a thing, a school cafeteria grading system like the health department grades for restaurants. Does this mean you think a lot of school cafeterias are unsanitary?
No. As a dad of a seven-year-old, and he's in school, and also as a council member, I'm constantly visiting my schools, looking at what capital needs they have, whether they need air conditioning for an auditorium, they need technology, and I'm constantly visiting the cafeterias and speaking to the workers. And I ask questions. I want to know what happens when food is rotten, that, you know, when they get food that's given to the kids and it's rotten, what happens with that food? And they have a process. They separate the food, they put it in another room, and they send it back to the vendor. I ask questions about rodents. You know, some of these schools are extremely old, and therefore they have rodents. I want to know, what do they do? What does the custodian do? What does the janitor do to address these issues in terms of rodents? And in doing these walkthroughs 4 years ago, we came up with the idea that every school should have a letter grade attached to their cafeteria, just like they have a letter grade attached to how well they're doing in terms of their education. And so I proposed a bill that would require every public school in the city of New York to have a letter grade at a visible location so that parents know the cleanliness of their cafeteria. And should the school get a C or minus, that the school must immediately inform every parent in that school.
Last question. We just have a minute and a half or so left, so it's really too big a question for our time, but one I'm guessing you think about growing up where you grew up, representing the district you represent. Everyone talks about the South Bronx as a high poverty community for decades, probably since before you were born. Programs come and go, but it retains that status with all the problems that go with it that you've been talking about, higher crime, more health problems, more problems in the schools. Why is it so hard for the neighborhood to turn the corner?
Well, our community in the South Bronx is turning that corner. You know, just a few years back, we shut down the Spofford Juvenile Detention Center, and we're building 700 units of 100% affordable housing with open space, new health facilities, a new daycare, a new head start there. you know, in La Central, you know, in the Melrose part of the district, you know, we're building 1,000 new units of 100% affordable housing. A YMCA has recently been built. We're going to do the ribbon cutting shortly. I think a lot has to do with the perception of what the Bronx was and what the Bronx is now. The Bronx is safer, but there are challenges that we have, such as, you know, we have the markets in Hunts Point. They're an economic engine in our communities. You know, my dad worked there for 18 years. That's how my family survived. He was a local 202 member. But the cons to that is the amount of trucks that we have driving through our communities. And so, you know, as someone that's born and raised in this community and has the privilege to represent it now, you know, I take it extremely serious when I go to City Hall and we're negotiating the budget, that I'm ensuring that we're getting our fair share in our communities. But I'm also very vocal about all these substance abuse programs being brought into the South Bronx, all the homeless shelters being brought into the South Bronx. And that's a problem with that we have in our city in terms of fair share. Not all communities are doing their fair share. And so I'm using my voice. I'm using my platform as the chair of the Land Use Committee and my relationships with the administration to bring this to light so that every community can do its fair share and we can prosper.
City Council Member Rafael Salamanca from District 17 in the South Bronx on week 17 of our year-long series, 51 council members in 52 weeks, interviewing every representative from every neighborhood in the city. Councilman, thank you so much for a good conversation today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.